Welcome to the Research Impact podcast series. I'm Dermot Hayes, host, disability activist for many decades and a member of the Clare Leader Forum, a peer support group. I'm also on the board of the Independent Living Movement of Ireland. Today's subject matter is the importance of having the right wheelchair to enable equality and opportunity. I'm joined to discuss this today by Dr. Rosie Gowran, a lecturer and occupational therapist in the School of Allied Health in UL. Rosie is a member of the World Health Organization Global Cooperation of Assistive Technology, GATE, Research Group. International Society of Wheelchair Professionals, Professional Standard Boards. She's also on the board directors of Associated Irish Power Football. And also joined by my great old friend, well, not old friend, great LEAGAD, confidential recipient of the HSE Disability Actives, and also author of the book, Don't Tell Me I Can't, and she's also a parent herself. Today I'm going to start off with the first question. Dr. Rosie, what does all this mean?
Well, having the right wheelchair is essential for people who need it, so that they can live their lives the way they want to live their lives. And one of the challenges is that currently, globally, it's a global issue, the way of providing wheelchairs is not adequate. So while people will receive products, the whole service provision system is very complex and it's ad hoc. So for example, if we think about Ireland, I've been looking at Ireland for a number of years in relation to research, and in 2008 I was funded by the Health Research Board to do my doctoral study looking at wheelchair and seating provision in Ireland. And what I found is that there's a very ad hoc system with issues in relation to access to services for people of all ages. So we have a situation where we have, you know, children waiting, and that's going to have an impact on their development and growth and their ability to concentrate in school, because if you don't have the right wheelchair and you're not comfortable and you're not able to move around and, you know, access your environment, that has an impact on your ability to concentrate. Indeed. Also that your confidence and you're to actually do what you want to do. The other aspect is in relation to, because it's complex, all of us here are of different shapes and sizes, we all have different needs, we do different things. So the whole assessment process in relation to having the right wheelchair needs to be individualised, and we need to, you know, to ensure that we're meeting people's individual needs. And a wheelchair is not just a piece of equipment, it is an essential primary assistive technology. So, for example, it's you know, people have described to me the wheelchair as being their legs, you know, it's part of who they are. It's a very embodied thing, and I've described it as an intrinsic and extrinsic enabler, where it impacts on your physical, psychological and social health and well-being. And if it's not right, that can have a serious effect on not only on your physical health, but also on your mental health as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I go over to Lee now, because Lee is a wheelchair user herself. Lee, how are you?
I'm grand, thanks.
Yeah, can you add something to this?
Yeah, I'm a thalidomide survivor, so I don't deformate her legs. So I am completely dependent on my powered wheelchair. Without my wheelchair, I wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. My chair is obviously a little more specialised than some to allow me to be able to drive it. But I have had a wheelchair now since I was about 4 years old. And what Rosie said is absolutely correct. Without the chair, I work full time, I'm a parent, I drive. I wouldn't be able to do any of those things without my wheelchair. Yep.
Okay.
And I suppose one of the challenges is that if something happens, so if somebody's wheelchair breaks down, for example, it depends on where you live, will depend the type of service you receive. So it's a real kind of postcode lottery. It's very ad hoc. There's no regulation in the system in Ireland. I'm talking about Ireland at the moment. And we've no national policy. So this is a real challenge. So what my research has highlighted is, you know, that we need to look at access to services for children, for people who have had traumatic injury like spinal cord injury or brain injury, that they get the services they need, you know, from the acute stage of their mm-hmm. rehabilitation, and then follow up as they go home and live in the community. And they have very different needs than children who grow up as wheelchair users, who know what they need okay. and have an understanding of that. And also people with progressive neurological conditions, you know, they will be transitioning from, you know, needing a wheelchair for longer distances to becoming full-time wheelchair users. And we need to address that need and support them in that transition. And it should be seen as an enabler rather than something that disables you. But certainly the current system, there's many bottlenecks that actually create barriers for people and cause problems in relation to their confidence to access education, employment and so on. Because if someone's wheelchair breaks down and they mm-hmm. have to wait for anything from 24 hours to 10 days for a part for their wheelchair mm-hmm. and it could be something as simple as a brake.
Several weeks sometimes.
Yeah. And really we need to do more research to actually find out exactly what's going on, because we don't have that data, because we don't have the health technology to show us what the problem is, because it's not connected. We don't have an IT system that will tell us the statistics and what's happening.
Rosie, is this just Ireland or?
No, it's not. There's a global initiative now. So you mentioned the GATE initiative, mm-hmm. which is the Global Cooperation of Assistive Technology. And that's a driving force from the WHO, where we're looking at, you know, access to assist technology for all people, mm-hmm. and they've created a product list, and wheelchair and seating is one of those priority products. and the World Health Assembly recently passed a resolution which actually places assist technology on the list of important aspects to address mm-hmm. for people in relation to the Sustainable Development Goals and enhancing health and well-being for all people. So they're looking, there's a drive now to look at that and to ensure that all countries are providing adequate services. And this is very challenging.
Have you seen change?
There's certainly a huge awareness. Mm-hmm. There's a built awareness in relation to the importance of the issue. The changes are slow. Mm. I suppose more people are talking about the issue. However, governments need to take on the role of creating national policy so that there's a driver and there's, you know, there's a will to change. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Lee, from your work on a daily basis, have you come across this issue as an issue?
Very much so.
Have you?
I have come across this issue of, it's a very, it's not a very equitable system. For example, if you need to rely on the health services to buy your wheelchair, mm-hmm. you are assessed. And depending on the assessment of an OT, and depending on what they say, may mean that you either are deemed fit to go out on your own in a wheelchair, that you have to be supervised mm-hmm. to go outside the house, or that you don't get a chair at all, a power chair that is. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you buy your own chair, if you're wealthy enough to buy your own chair, and remember these chairs can cost anything from 6,000 to 30,000 euro. So if you're wealthy enough to be able to buy your own chair, there is no assessment. And so you can just go to a medical supply place and say, yep, like that one, that's the mm-hmm. one I want, and take it, whether it's right for you or not. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's almost swung at times too far in the opposite direction in the health services, in that people with physical disabilities are not being treated as adults and mm-hmm. not being allowed to take the risks in their life that everybody else would take.
Yeah, but because you've lived in a few jurisdictions, Lee.
I have.
And is there a massive change between the three jurisdictions?
Certainly been a change in wheelchairs. There certainly has. When I had my first power chairs. They were the old acid-filled batteries that my mother used to complain bitterly about them putting holes in her floor every night.
That's an armor.
The acid would, in Uri, the acid would leak out of the batteries and destroy the floors. Chairs are much better now. They're much more computerized now, so more things can be done to ensure that more people can actually use a chair and can maneuver themselves around them 20, 30 years ago. So I've seen a huge change in that.
And accessibility, obviously, to buildings, etc.
Accessibility, I've seen a massive change. Ireland still has a long, long way to go. But we went to Texas. We moved to Texas in 1995 because I wasn't able to basically access anywhere. I wasn't able to access a lot of shops. I wasn't able to access restaurants, bars, the cinema. And at the time I had a baby and I knew there was no way I'd be able to access the school when he got to the age of going to school. So we moved to the States. We came back 12 years later because things had gotten better for wheelchair users. They're still not perfect by any means, but slowly but surely I think we're getting there.
Good. Well, yeah, it's great news. Yeah.
And just on that point, where access is, you know, there's a huge awareness of the need for, you know, accessible environments. So, but if you don't have your wheelchair, you can't do anything. And this is, so my work focuses, because when I talk about work, people talk to me about accessible buildings and, you know, which is really important. But this is about actually access to the wheelchair, the primary assistive technology that enables people to actually go out and, and live their lives.
Your legs.
And I think that's, I suppose that's the important focus of the work that I'm doing in relation to building that awareness of the importance of this and getting
Rosie, just how long are you at this now?
Well, Dermot, I started as an occupational therapist when I graduated, and I started working, and I was asked to assess people for wheelchairs, and I had had a couple of I had a lot. I had 2 weeks in college at the time. I did my degree in Brunel University. A few decades ago. I'm 20 years looking at this.
Okay, 20 years.
And I realized when I started working, and I was asked to, you know, to assess children, and that it was extremely complex, and I was worried that I didn't know what I was doing, you know, about what I was doing. And so I decided then, when I came back, I was living in London at the time, and I came back and came to work in Ireland. And so I did my master's in Trinity, and I looked at wheelchair users' perspectives on wheelchair service delivery in 1999-2000. And what the frustrating thing is, some of the challenges remain the same. There has been progress. However,
in what way? Because give us kind of two or three examples of progress.
Well, while there's no mandatory education training available, there is some education training which has been delivered by either suppliers and manufacturers and Enable Ireland run a program as well. And we also developed a postgraduate certificate here in UL. But we're currently reviewing that at
the
moment.
Are you the first in Ireland?
The first in Ireland, yeah. So, and we've had about 11 graduates from that, and some are coming back now to do further work and research. Wow. So the whole idea is about building capacity in the field. So from, you know, my initial research, I was fortunate in 2008 to be funded by the Health Research Board to do my doctoral study, and I got a fellowship, which allowed me to basically work on my research full time. And I did a stakeholder centred, what we call an organisational ethnographic study, where I spent time in Enable Ireland as a host institution, just to get to know who was involved, who were the key stakeholders involved in delivering services. And it was an opportunity then to access people and interview them. And I suppose I used the philosophy around the whole notion of of reflective consciousness. Why are we here? Why are we doing what we do? And why is it important?
Well, there are many stakeholders now.
Well, there was 35 people I interviewed, and of that number, there was 8 people who accessed wheelchair services, and then there was people who supplied wheelchairs, people who, therapists, managers. And what I did was I interviewed each individual, understood their perspectives, and then I brought everybody together to share that perspective and create a picture of what the system looked like. And so from that, a core group of that 35, there was about 8 or 9 people, came together and we created a strategy document, a plan, looking at sustainability indicators. So to monitor, measure and respond to the system. So what's the key issue? How do we deal with it, and how do we know that it's working, and then how do we respond when it's not working? So the 4 key areas that came out of that was access to services, assessment and delivery processes, tracking, tracing and taking care of wheelchair and seating assist technology. So looking at where, you know, when somebody gets their wheelchair, do we know in the event of, you know, if there's an adverse incident and the product is being recalled, where that wheelchair is?
Good.
Do we have a system that that knows that? If somebody's chair is constantly being repaired, do we have a record of repair services and the history of that chair, so that we know that it's safe and that it's, it can be used again if it, if we use a recycling system? And then the whole taking care of the wheelchair, there's follow-up and management and maintenance, so they make sure that people aren't left stranded in the street on a bank holiday weekend and nobody to call if something happens and their wheelchair breaks down. These are some of the challenges that are faced. But also the other aspect was education and research, building capacity, looking at education training for all people in relation to the people who use the services themselves, the people who are providing or prescribing wheelchairs, education training or that, and also research in looking at new technologies, but also the health and well-being of people who use wheelchairs. There's not enough emphasis on making sure that people stay well as wheelchair users, because they are sitting all the time. They're not as physically active, and they have other needs. So if you're not sitting well in your wheelchair, that affects your digestive system, your breathing, your posture. You can be, you know, you can, you're at risk of pressure injuries. There are lots of complex issues that are, that become, you know, an additional health issue for people. And these are things that we need to look at, we need to investigate and do more of.
Excellent. Lee, do you want to add anything to that? What she's after saying?
I think that one of the things that need to be looked at on a national or even a global basis, but certainly in Ireland, needs to be that when somebody gets a new wheelchair, that they're left their old one as a backup, because there is no, there's nothing out there at the moment. If your chair breaks at 10 o'clock on a Friday night,
there's no AA's kind of thing.
There's no AA for wheelchairs, unfortunately. So it's imperative, like, you know, and if somebody, like, I'll give my own example. I had an accident a few weeks ago where my chair was destroyed. I was hit by a car, ironically, and my chair was destroyed. If I hadn't had a spare, I wouldn't have been able to get out of bed in the morning until I got a new chair, which could have taken weeks. I'm not the only person that
thankfully you're
that
here
happened.
Now, Lee. Thank you, Lee. Yeah. So that's your experience. That's a great example, isn't it?
Yeah, and great, I think I suppose that they're all, that's all part of that follow-up management and making sure that people have what they need and that it's timely. Because if a young person wants to get out and go to work, and there's two people going for an interview, I use this example. If I was going for the interview and, you know, my car breaks down, I can hop in a taxi and get to that interview.
Gosh, yeah.
But if I'm in, if I'm a wheelchair user and my wheelchair breaks down, that isn't, I can't do that, so I have to wait for somebody to either call or I miss that interview, you know. So I, so it creates a barrier in the system for people to feel confident. You know, there are very simple things like somebody's braking on their wheelchair, and it taking weeks to get it repaired, and people lose their confidence, they don't feel safe, and we need to develop a system where people feel confident and know. And it's not just for, it's about a society, for all of us. Any of us could become a wheelchair user at any time.
Indeed.
We need to know that we can pick up the phone and get the services we need.
And Rosie, do you reckon that the service providers, you know, there are multiple service providers in Ireland, are they getting the message of things changing? Are they conscious of this?
Well, I think there is definitely a built awareness, but there's no regulation on the system.
Mm-hmm. So I know you were saying that.
With my research, I've called on government. I've presented in Leinster House a number of times, along with people who use wheelchairs across the life course. So we.
And is there a willingness by the government, you feel?
Certainly they were listening, but there hasn't been any progress. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that needs to be addressed. And I'm continuing to do research and mm-hmm. build evidence, and that's coming soon. And, you know, in relation to the issues, just mm-hmm. to, so there's a stronger voice. But also at an international level, there's a driver for countries to develop national policies globally. Mm-hmm. So I was working with the International Society of Wheelchair Professionals, and they employed me as a consultant to work with Romania and the Philippines. So two very different contexts.
Good experience for you?
Fantastic experience. Mm-hmm. But I was there supporting people on the ground, so to build their own capacity mm-hmm. within the system and to facilitate a needs assessment of what's happening in their countries mm-hmm. and also to develop a strategic plan for that. So I was a facilitator of the research and supporting them with that. So they,
what kind of things were they coming up against?
Very similar things in relation to acts of service, but however you're dealing with different contexts. So if you imagine in the Philippines you're 7,000 islands and 20 typhoons a year. Their infrastructure is very different from ours. So they have many challenges in relation to trying to build a sustainable system that works well for them. Also, the kind of supply of products they get are not as high quality as ours, and they're not as regulated. Mm. So, but the essential issues are the same, there's a need for building awareness and education and training. But they did a similar thing in relation to stakeholder-centered research, engaging organisations, people who use services, mm-hmm. Government, and local governments who are engaged with the budgets and stuff mm-hmm. like that, so they mm-hmm. understand, have an awareness of the issues.
And the budget's big in places like that?
No, they wouldn't be. They would have a different system to ours, So there are many challenges for every country, and we really need to be context specific, and that's where my research comes in relation to what I've created in my work.
So budgets are maybe not as big on the agenda as quality and assessment, would you say?
Yeah. Well, it's all
prioritizing. What would you prioritizing?
Well, right at the moment, it's the people in Ireland. People do get wheelchairs.
Yeah.
But they can wait. They mightn't get exactly what they need, because obviously there's a list of the type of products that are available to people.
And glad to get it as well.
Certainly there's a feeling out there that people are fighting for what they need, and it's hard work. And that's something that's coming out very strongly in the work that I'm doing. So these are things that need to be addressed. That why is that? Because we don't have, and my work is all about building sustainable infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's about understanding that from a personal and professional and political perspective, but also that we work collectively, because this is, as I said already, a societal issue. But we need to be looking at creating a system that's sustainable, so that in the event, so for example, in the 90s, the government gave once-off funding for aids and appliances, something around 7 to 9 million, and people had two or three wheelchairs, and some of them had wheelchairs in their sheds that weren't suitable, but they got them. But there was no infrastructure to support that. And I, at the time, went to the Department of Health with my master's research to explain to them that this was, while it was fantastic that people were getting something, it was crazy that we weren't actually building a system where it was sustainable. So then in the economic boom, we had a situation where people got what they wanted.
Makes sense,
And good quality But we didn't build infrastructure to support that. So now when we're more cash strapped, there's people are now waiting again, and there's more problems within the system. So we need to start thinking long term and building systems that work.
I think also that what needs to be looked at from the other side is, why do wheelchairs cost so much?
Like, that's a big one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Why do they cost so much?
Well, can you give us a general thing to the listener now?
Is it because, like, a manual chair can be gotten for around, 500 or 1,000 euro?
A new one.
But a power chair can be anything from the cheapest that I've seen around, although there could be cheaper, is around 6,000-7,000, going all the way up to 30,000-35,000. Mm-hmm. So why does a wheelchair cost more than a car?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a big question mark there. The other thing that I think needs to be seriously looked at by whoever is that what's come through my office is that if somebody gets a spinal cord injury, excuse me, in an accident, for example, and they're taken to hospital and it's assessed that, you know, their spinal cord injury is at such a level that they need a wheelchair, mm-hmm. and they'll need a powered wheelchair. That won't be ordered for them until after, till they're ready to be discharged from the NRH, before it's even ordered, which takes another few months. So somebody could be, and a lot of people are, about a year or more without being able to move themselves, mm-hmm. which is, to me, that's cruel and unusual punishment.
Good point, actually. A great point, Rosie.
I mean, that's, I suppose, the point is that this is a basic human right.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, my vision is that everybody should be supplied with a wheelchair free of charge. It is primary to living, if you need one. And that is the message to that we need to be looking at it like that. If we really mean equality and of opportunity, if we really mean to enable people, if we want to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals mm-hmm. for all people, then this needs to be addressed in a way that is sustainable, that we're using the monies well, and that we're regulating a system so that purchasing of wheelchairs, like we now have a Pharmacy Act in Ireland, we have regulation on the purchase of drugs. Mm-hmm. Wheelchairs are essentially a prosthetic. They're a medical device, and they're not seen as that in the view of the budgets. They're under the auspice of Aids and Appliances here in Ireland. So they're seen as a piece of equipment that you could possibly live without, but you can't live without it if you need it. That's the bottom line.
So, Rosie, in the next 12 months, where do you think this research will take you?
In the next 12 months?
Yeah.
Well, I'm continuing to do research here in UL with the occupational therapy students, and we have a few projects that are just finishing, and we have preliminary results of that. So I'll be presenting that work at the International Seating Symposium in Pittsburgh in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, will you?
I'm presenting at the World Health Organization Global Report on Assist Technology consultation in August, specifically talking about the global challenges to access appropriate wheelchairs. And this is a collaboration with some of the leaders in research and service provision. In addition, I'll be presenting a special theme session at the Association of the Advancement of Assist Technology AAATE Conference 2019 in Bologna, talking about the challenges to getting the right wheelchair. So there is, you know, there's a global drive going on. And what I would hope is that my vision is to have a centre for health and wellbeing for wheelchair users, where we can look at all those areas and develop research and education training so that we can, but we need government buy-in for that, and that's essential, and I think that's, you know, it's something that we need.
So you need to be lobbying your TDs locally. Will we lead that over to Lee there?
I think it's about all of us. I think it's about every member of society realising, because 1 in 100 people from the stats that we have in Ireland are wheelchair users. So, you know, it's not, you know, and anybody, it could be your mother, your father, or your your children, yourself. This is about all of us. So, so we all need to be lobbying if we're, you know, and we all need to take this on as a serious issue.
Access is everybody's business.
Access, yeah, of course, yeah, you're right, Lee. Let's be, let me be clear about that. Among your peers now, Lee, is there a kind of a consciousness about doing something about it?
There are so many issues out there. I think that the independent living movement of Ireland certainly are go-getters out there to go and get policies changed and improve the lives of people with disabilities. I don't know that many people, apart from Rosie, are specifically looking at just wheelchairs, and more people should be. When somebody says access, you know, you're right, they do talk about the built environment, but they don't talk about the fact that if you can't get out of bed in the morning, what use is your cinema, your local cinema being accessible, or there being a hoist in your local swimming pool if you can't get there in the first place?
And I suppose I've found that in my, in, you know, through my research, that people themselves don't realise how important this is for their, you know, that how sitting in a chair that's too big for them, or their foot plates aren't right, or, you know, that they're getting a pressure sore because they're sitting in
very
a
common
bad
issue,
way.
Pressure sores.
Yeah, a pressure injury that they you know, they don't realise that impact that's having on their health and well-being and their ability to get out and about and be confident in what they're doing. Because if you don't feel well and you're uncomfortable, that's going to impact on your ability to concentrate in school, to get a job, to feel confident that you can do the job, to have the energy to do the job. And these are really important things, because we have policy and the drivers around accessing education, accessing employment, yet we've no policies around provision of assistive technology, primary technologies like wheelchair and seating provision.
And if you have to wait several months in pain or being uncomfortable because you're either in the wrong size chair or the chair's not right, or maybe you've developed some sort of a condition where you need a different seating system, then that certainly will impact on your life as well.
And growing through the years, I suppose, really starting as a child, maybe the changes over the years in your life.
For me?
No, for children.
For children, because that's going to impact on their, you know, their growth and development. And we've had various items in the media over the last number of last year and this year around children waiting for wheelchairs. And in this day and age in Ireland, we shouldn't be hearing those stories, and it shouldn't be the way it is.
And they don't stop growing, so they don't. It's like equating making your child wait for a pair of shoes. Your non-disabled child, excuse me, wait for a pair of shoes for a year whenever they've grown out of their shoes. Nobody would expect that. A child in a wheelchair, that is their shoes, that is their legs.
But I would say, Lee, as well, you can walk without shoes, but you can't move without your wheelchair.
Rosie, what's your motivation for doing this work?
Well, when I was doing my, in the middle of writing up my PhD, I was, you know, it's a roller coaster when you're doing a PhD, and I was reflecting on why am I doing this, and I remember back my grandfather Joe Sharp, but he was an artificial limb maker, and he started an apprenticeship in 1916, age 13, with Smith and Shepherd on Stephen's Green, and he used to make peg legs and auxiliary crutches for the British Ministry of Pensions at the time. And then he went on to carve legs, women's legs, men's legs, feet, hands, out of willow. And my mother would describe how they made the the cuff for the leg, mm-hmm. out of leather and the chamois interior, and how beautifully stitched they were, and how my grandfather was so caring, and how people would come into their house and my mother behind the couch watching the leg, someone's leg being fitted. And also telling the story of a man coming up from Kilkenny who had no arms, and he had no bath at home, and my grandfather would let him have a bath in their house so that he could go to the match in Dublin. And these are stories that I grew up with. But also as I grew as a child, when I was 11 years old, I went to visit the Sunshine Home in Leopardstown, now Laura Lynn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there I met... First I met lots of children in the playroom, but to me they were very different than I was, and there was one little girl who shuffled around on her bottom, and she looked very different, mm. and she kept saying to me, up, up, and I was terrified as an 11-year-old, frightened, and I eventually picked her up, and her smile just captured my very essence. And, you know, and I didn't know then that had an impact on the way I feel about things. Mm-hmm. But also I met a young boy who was the same age as I was, 11 years old, and he was a wheelchair user. And he was up on respite or something, and I started talking to him like he was a baby. And he said to me, "Why are you talking to me like that?" And I got all embarrassed and realised that he was the same age as me. He was better at maths and English than I was.
All right, okay.
You know, and when I reflected on it, it was that whole importance of everybody has the right to be. And so that's where I suppose my work comes from,
yeah,
from
okay.
that human rights yes, perspective, yeah. that we all have rights, but we also have a responsibility for the rights of others. And that's, I suppose, what drives my work and keeps me going in relation to...
Very interesting.
To, you
very
know, it gets
yeah.
frustrating when you're, you know, because it's slow
And it got you into
progress.
The Dáil Éireann.
Yeah, I presented a number of times now in Leinster House. I was fortunate enough to present at a cross-party meeting in 2014 where I presented my research alongside four people who were wheelchair users who talked about their lives. One person, David Griffith, talked about growing up as a wheelchair user and the importance of having a chair that, you know, was looked good and made him feel good. Another young woman who'd had a spinal cord injury talked about the impact that had, you know, the sudden loss of not being able to walk, and then the challenges trying to get the wheelchair she needed. And eventually ending up going to have to buy it privately because she couldn't get it within the system. And then somebody who, with a progressive neurological condition, who was transitioning to using a wheelchair more full-time but needed it for getting out and about. So these were, alongside the research that I was doing, they told their stories to try and create impact.
Mm-hmm.
And I also then subsequently have met with Minister Finian McGrath a number of times in relation to highlighting the need. And I've put forward a proposal to develop a health and wellbeing centre for education and research for wheelchair users.
Did he listen to you?
He listened, but... we can listen and we can talk about these things, but as yet we have no action on that.
I'd like to thank my two speakers here today. You'll be listening to Dr. Rosie Gowan and Lee Gass, and both of them are doing great work on an everyday basis. And Dr. Rosie Gowan is with UL here in Limerick, and you can find out more about the research by going to ul.ie/research. To all those who participate in supporting this research, to the Health Research Board, International Society of Wheelchair Professionals, my name is Dermot Hayes. I'm a disability activist from Ennis.